multi-front war with Iran and its allies. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 86 degrees and partly cloudy. In New York City, 87 degrees with fair skies. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns. Thanks for listening.
Afternoon, Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, wherever you are tuned in, you are listening to Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. My name is Daniel Del Pielago. I want to once again thank you, send thanks to all our listeners and supporters for keeping WPFW and Taking Action going. I am glad and honored to be joined this afternoon by Nadia Salazar. She is the Senior Campaigns Manager with the D.C. Fiscal Policy Institute. But today we'll be talking about her work with Just Recovery D.C. Thank you for joining us, Nadia. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to talk to you about all the tax justice work that we're doing, but also to invite people to join us.
That's right. And before we get started, I always like to ask the guests to tell us a little bit about yourself, whatever you want to share, just so folks get a sense of who's on the air.
Sure. Love to introduce myself to people. My name is Nadia. As Daniel said, I use she, they pronouns, and I'm super excited to be part of to join you all today. I migrated here as a young Bolivian when I was 10 with my family, and I've been in the DMV since. I've traveled for my organizing work since I was 15, just trying to support migrant communities throughout the country, from Virginia to Louisiana to Mississippi. So I've really honed in on my organizing work, doing immigrant rights and labor organizing, and super excited to be back in the DMV area, be back in D.C., to be able to bring a little bit of the tools that I was able to gain throughout the country so that we're able to continue to push some of the organizing work that's been done here in D.C. And just excited to, I'm a mom, I have a 2-year-old daughter, and excited to share a little bit of what the organizing world is with her as she's growing up.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that. She's my Andean sister. I'm from Peru, so we got the Andean connection going on this afternoon here on WPFW. Well, once again, thank you so much for joining us. You know, increasingly in this city, what we're seeing is the wealth gap grow. We're seeing very wealthy people enjoying the city, enjoying amenities, playing pickleball, going to restaurants, doing their thing. But what we are also seeing, and it's evidenced by the budget that we are expecting for the coming fiscal year, where many of the safety net programs, the resources that low-income district residents, that translates to Black residents, residents of color here in the district mostly, depend on and look forward to just be able to make it, we're seeing some cuts. Just Recovery DC is doing some work to be able to right those wrongs and to bring some equity into the district. You know, the city's talking a lot about equity, racial equity, you know, wealth equity, and all of these things. but we're not necessarily seeing that in practice. Yeah. Could you talk to us just a little bit? I think just give us an overview of who Just Recovery DC is, and then let's get into this issue of this ever-widening gap.
Yeah, no, for sure. Just Recovery really began before I started working at DCFPI in the spring of 2020. Advocates, organizers, and really tax policy experts, along with some grassroots organizations, were really passionate about raising revenue and kind of raising revenue for a racially and economically equitable like recovery from the pandemic. It was really a response to, as you saw, there wasn't really any protections for people who were not in the formal economy, as you like to call it, right? And so there's this high need of somehow being able to equitably recover. And that's really how we came about. We're around 53 organizations right now, the core is around 10 to 15. But we, not just from its inception, we were consistently revamping, reshaping, rechanging. And so just right now, we're actually reorienting our work to be able to be grounded because we know, we saw what the budget did, right? We saw what this season brought around, and we're trying to get ready for next year. We know it's not going to get any better.
Thank you so much. And oftentimes, when we engage in the budget cycle, you know, what we often hear from the mayor and then followed by some of the council is, where is the money coming from? There's not enough money, you know.
Right.
And, you know, if I understand correctly, Just Recovery is working on some of those ways to actually bring in more money, identify ways that we can bring in more money so everybody's able to enjoy this city. Before we get into that, if you would just kind of talk to us, because I've been checking out your website, you know, prepping for the show, and there's just some staggering data there around the inequity that exists. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think for me, what's been most impactful in terms of data is who pays taxes in DC. I think a lot of it, you know, we think that the chart kind of goes up steadily and, you know, folks at the bottom are paying what they need to and folks at the top are paying what they need to. But that's not really the case. The chart really goes up and down. So if you really pay attention to it, you know, the lowest 20%, which is folks that are making less than $26,000 a year, $26,300 a year, are paying around 4.8%. The second 20% is paying around 10.6%, and that's folks who make between 26 and 55. So it's going steadily up, right? Then you have the middle, and that's the middle 20, which most of us kind of live in that middle, right? Between 55 and 137, really in the district and DC and the DMV area, that's where we kind of live. And then the fourth 20%, which is between 100 and 148, it still goes up to 12.4. So it goes 11.5, 12.4. However, after that, the top, the next 15%, and then the next four and the next one, they're paying almost as much as the middle 20. So the top 1% is paying 11.4% of taxes, and the middle 20 is paying 11.5%. So that shows you a clear picture of who's actually given into the system for the vital services and resources that our community needs. That in itself is inequity, right? And that is rooted in some of the laws and things that we have in the district, like capital gains laws, right? That protect wealth. So I would say the only reason I shared that particular number is because that it impacts every person that's listening right now. And it will tell you the real story of the district, right? Does it make sense that I pay the same taxes as Jeff Bezos? Probably not. Right. Probably not. Yeah.
Yeah, no, thank you for sharing that. Then the other thing that kind of stood out for me was that roughly half the wealth in the district. Yes. So, you know, a relatively small number. I mean, we all like to say DC is a small town, but it is, you know, it has a significant amount of population.
Yeah.
And to hear that.
Sorry about that. The census said we had around 670,000 people in the district, right? That's not counting. Mind you, the census in itself is historically has its issues, right? Folks who are undocumented, folks who are not historically part of the system are not going to open the door to census workers. And then you have the other census surveys that are every 2 years that are even more extensive and folks are not participating in. So without even thinking about that, right, our population is at 671 as of 2022. And just for 1,500 of those households to hold the wealth is, you know, it nearly half of the wealth is really, really, it paints a clear picture.
That's right. No, that's right. And I think, as I mentioned, you know, I think part of why I wanted to speak with you and lift up the work of Just Recovery was because of this most recent budget cycle, where, as I mentioned at the opening, we saw just this narrative that we had to get back to pre-COVID, right? Like if COVID, to borrow a line from Trump, just disappeared like a miracle. It just went away.
Right.
And everything's back to normal. So we have to get back to normal budgeting. But we've seen the result of that. And, you know, we are bracing to see more people experiencing homelessness, more people having to make these tough decisions. Can you talk, you know, through a tax lens, if even possible, but talk to us a little bit about, you know, how you saw the budget and how it plays out?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a young migrant in this area, like growing up with Bowser, being someone who we feared, right? Like in the migrant community, we fought back against her quite a bit. And then seeing how she is putting together this moral document, right? Her proposal of a budget is a moral document of a city. And how she's putting together this idea of shared sacrifice. And once you get into the weeds of her shared sacrifice, it was shared sacrifice on the backs of Black and brown people, Black and brown working people, right? Like, and so it started with that narrative of, like you said, oh, we have to get to pre-pandemic, and that's not realistic. We live in a completely different world. There are different needs. We have realized that people are people, right? Like they can't just do this 40 hours a week and then expect to do another part-time to be able to somehow make ends meet. And so again, like folks rely on resources and services. So this narrative of shared sacrifice, like when that came out, it already told me that this budget was going to be, it was going to be an uphill battle. And so we had this kind of immense opportunity at the council to right a lot of these wrongs. And not to say that they didn't do some of that work, but we had an opportunity to just flip it. I mean, she had, the mayor, Mayor Bowser had proposed a 7% sales tax increase. That's an incredibly regressive sales tax, right? It's incredibly regressive. Who does it impact? It's going to impact working people. And so as a response, the council needed to step in and just come in swinging, really, and say, we need to really tax wealth. We need to tax the wealthy. And we need to do it now because some of those resources are vital, right? Like we have, if you look at homelessness and folks who are experiencing homelessness, they are at risk of other things, right? And of health concerns. There are other things that go with that. So we're talking about life and death. Right. Like there is research that links those things together. Right. They go without some medication that they might need. So the budget with the shared sacrifice narrative starting off on this regressive tax was bad. We had this opportunity for council to come in and just say, you know what, we'll do something about this. They did adopt a piece of what we had kind of recommended as part of our platform, which is raising the property tax. For $1 million households, right? Not 1 million. We wanted 1.5 million and above. What the council did is they did 2.5. And so that's not nearly enough for what we actually need to cover housing, to cover different resources and services. So what this budget really came out with was terrible math, terrible solutions, and really not listening to the answers that we were giving them, right? There are ways to tax capital. There are ways to tax income. That doesn't mean folks who are in the middle. It means this top percent that we're talking about. We're paying the same amount right now. So it should be evened out, right? So we proposed a lot of these things and we didn't unfortunately see them. And it was really disheartening to come to the Wilson Building week after week, day after day. And really, it seemed like every single day we had a different answer from different council folks. And just to say that I think next year is going to be the same. So we need to be ready to be able to hold folks accountable, especially our elected officials.
Yeah, I was involved in some of that work and meeting with council members. I mean, it was depressing to hear, like, you see the numbers, you see what the mayor had laid out, and to say we're not looking at other revenue raisers. It was disheartening, to say the least. There is some basis. There have been some victories in the past around taxing wealth. You know, those folks who have more than their fair share. Not judging, they maybe worked hard, maybe their families, you know, however they've inherited that wealth. At the end of the day, they are wealthy and can afford to pay. Talk to us a little bit, you know, I know you may not have been directly involved because this was a couple of years ago before you came on, but, you know, talk to us a little bit. There is a basis for doing this. There has been some, you know, the council was receptive to a certain extent.
Yes.
Or some, you know, taxing the wealthy at a higher rate. I believe there was something that actually occurred in 2020.
Yep.
Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, no, we had a big victory, right? And it's really a big win just for racial equity and economic justice. And that it was really, we were thinking that we're going toward the right direction, right? The DC Council voted to raise taxes on DC residents who earn more than a quarter of $1 million a year. And so that is someone who that's asking someone who makes around $350,000 to pay the equivalent of 2 cups of coffee a month. So to invest back in our communities, that's nothing, right? Some of us have to consistently make sacrifices in order to be able to make ends meet. So that felt like it was a really good win. And one of our proposals in our platform continues to be to tax DC residents who are earning really, really high, who have really high incomes. And so that big win set some precedent, and there were a lot of conversations and there was a lot of energy around that. However, we were starting off with a really crappy proposal from the mayor. Right. So there was a lot of fixing that had, there was a lot of moving and reshaping and changing to do. And I mean, a lot of what I saw in the council was also, I mean, they were forced to pin their committees and their work against each other, right? Like they're the needs of each separate committee, and they were forced to kind of work against each other in some ways. And that really sucks for elected officials, right? Like it made their job much harder in order to be able to craft a budget that made sense and fight back. Correct some of the wrongs that were presented on the initial proposal that the mayor gave.
No, thank you for that. And I mean, I think the other piece that I wanted to ask you just to talk a little bit about, because I know Fiscal Policy Institute engaged in this work, you know, along with Just Recovery, but there is wide support amongst district voters to, you know, tax wealth at a higher rate. If you would just talk a little bit about that, because I don't want folks thinking that, you know, there's no basis for this, nobody supports it, you know, the rich are going to do what they want. Like, there is somewhat of a groundswell.
Yeah.
You look at these other ways of bringing in more revenue to support the people that need it here in the district.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There is some push, and we did put out a survey, and I'll send the numbers over to you. I don't have them in front of me right now. I was looking through. But district residents who are over that threshold are interested in paying their fair share. They are interested in making sure that vital resources and services are protected. Just in this fight, right, when EITC was being threatened, the income tax was being threatened. Our educators and the parents and owners of these facilities came out together, and that includes a range of folks, right, in terms of income. And that's where I learned, and I met so many people, parents of many, many students, many individuals who are saying, right, we're willing to pay our fair share because I can, I mean, yeah, the rate on my institute is going to go up and I'm going to pay a little bit more. That might make it better for my child and this organization, this institution. But what about the other kids in the district? What about the other teachers? What about the other parents, right? So there, I mean, our community, really including our wealthy residents, are willing to pay their fair share. They know that there is an uneven, payment of taxes in the district, that this balance needs to be balanced out. They know, right, this data that I just gave you, that a cup of coffee or two cups of coffee a month isn't a big deal for them, right? But that means something when it comes to it going back into the budget and circling back out into our resources and services. So there are people who are willing, and they came out and advocated. There were op-eds that were put up because people are willing to fight. And they're willing to tell our elected officials that even if they are not willing to step up in these moments of crisis, our community will. And that includes wealthy folks, right?
That's right. No, and I think, I think that is important to raise up, because without those folks, those voices of saying tax me at a higher rate, oftentimes it is seen, or, and it allows these narratives to take hold, that people are just looking for some sort of some sort of government subsidy to save them, right? To pay their pay their food. When in fact, as we've been talking about, folks are making some very, very difficult choices. Yeah. They can't, lower income folks can't be taxed at that same rate and expect that they also have the money to be able to subsist in this very expensive city. Yeah. I mean, everything is just getting higher. And once again, in a city that at least on face value is engaging in racial equity work, they've got this Office of Racial Equity. They've got all these supposedly, when they do things, when they make bills, laws, programs, they have to use a racial equity lens. That includes tax equity. I think that's important. I don't know if you want to say a little something about that.
Yeah, I mean, it does, but it's also, it's all one cohesive narrative, right, that they've been putting out there. I mean, even when they started talking about EREP, right, like this idea of like people using EREP as a, like.
And that's the emergency rental assistance program, just in case.
That's right. People don't use it or abuse it, right? Like people need it. As a person myself who worked as a case manager in DC for many years, I can tell you, people rely on things like EREP. I mean, the saying, rent eats first, right? Like that is the first thing that you're going to take care of and protect. And so you have this really bad narrative around, our community, abusing resources and services that we're giving to them, plus the shared sacrifice idea, and the response is not to tax the wealthy, right? Like it doesn't really go hand in hand, right? Like you have to be able to talk about, like you said, racial equity and create these programs and services and say, we're going to treat, we're going to look at our bills through a racial equity lens now. Okay, racial equity also means economic justice. And economic justice means righting the wrongs of hundreds of years in the district of inequity, of injustice, of targeting Black and brown working people, of gentrification, right? Like, so it is, if you're doing racial justice work in the district as a city, right, as a government, that includes tax justice.
That's right. No, thank you for underscoring that. The budget process gives us maybe a couple of weeks to kind of breathe a little bit, and then we're back on it. And I know Just Recovery is ramping up for the season and just in general, right, to continue the message that we need to do better. There needs to be, more equity in the tax system. People need to pay their fair share, especially those who can, as we've been talking about. As we ramp up, for another season and in general to push this work forward, because what we're going to start seeing over the next couple of months is the results of this bad budget. We're going to start seeing it affecting people. We're going to see more cases in landlord-tenant court of people being taken to court. We're going to see more people experiencing homelessness, more people going home hungry, depending on, you know, food bank, food services. So we're going to start seeing that. So obviously all of us are really beginning to prepare for that. And I know Just Recovery is ramping up. Talk to us a little bit about the platform and just, you know, the work that you all are doing currently.
Right. As I was initially telling you, a lot of our work right now is in like kind of reorienting. I think a little bit of this delay of the Tax Revision Commission coming out with their recommendations also is giving us that space to plan. And so I think a lot of it is being able to focus on what our asks and our goals are going to be in the next year. One of the things that is true that you said is that the cycle is a couple of months. However, it's like the campaign has to be year long and it has to be ongoing. We have to be advocating all year long for the things that we need and protecting some of the programs that we win, right? Like, because we know that everything is up for grabs, that including EITC, right? Like that we need to be protecting some of this work. So our platform is really going to be focusing on tax support and making sure that these resources are shared evenly among our community, my apologies. And that really means when I say taxing wealth, I mean taxing high incomes, taxing lowering the threshold of the property value, taxing to 1.5 million, looking at capital gains and figuring out how we can tax some of that wealth that's being passed down, right? Some of this old money that we talk about in our community. The reason why old money continues and grows is because it's not taxed the same way than the money that I will pass on to my daughter, right? Like, so it's very different. And so it is rooted in racism. It is rooted in a lot of the things that we are fighting back right now. So right now, as Just Recovery, we want people to join us. If you're an organization that's interested in being part, if you're an individual that has energy, that's interested in being part of our coalition, please reach out to us. Again, we're doing the reorientation, so that includes every single one of our organizations having like a strategic planning of sorts to figure out what our next year is going to be about. However, we're grounded on the same values, right? Of tax and wealth, we're grounded on the same values of making sure our community needs heard. But also grounded in understanding that because we fought so hard, we know that the response from the opposition is going to be strong. So we need to be ready to ramp up some of this organizing, ramp up some of this advocacy, because next year is going to be harder. And the year after that is going to be harder. And so we're getting ready. We're gearing up. We're learning. We're building. We're talking to folks, making sure that we're connecting and building trust. You're an organizer, Daniel. You know well that without building trust and building community with each other, we're not going to be able to carry out a successful campaign. And so that's what we're going toward and really re-energizing ourselves. It was a really taxing cycle. People that I worked with for many, many years, that have worked on this for many years, like 13 cycles, 20 cycles, you know, told me this is the first I've seen this, you know. And so it was a taxing cycle. It was an exhausting cycle. And so we're also trying to re-energize ourselves to be ready for what's to come. And again, if one of the things that I learned this cycle is that the lobby that opposes the work that we're trying to protect and the services that we're trying to protect, they're coming in strong. And I saw it every single time I was at the Wilson Building. And so preparing for that mostly as well.
Yeah, no, I want to put a pin in that because I want to ask a follow-up question about, you know, the response from the other side, as it were. But you had mentioned something that I didn't think to ask as we were preparing, but how much can you share about the tax commission that was formed and their findings and, you know, was there anything valuable that came out of that?
You know, I think as a person who served as a commissioner in a different county, I think commissions do serve a purpose. I think they serve the purpose that whatever entity that's setting them up, like however much teeth they give them, that's how much power they're going to have. This commission didn't have a lot of power, but it is an appointed body, right? It is not an elected body. So you can look up who's in the body, who is in the Tax Revision Commission and what interests they represent. It takes a Google search, right? We had a handful of folks who were really in there fighting day in and day out to ensure that things like the business activity tax was talked about, right? Like that, those are the kind of like the structures that are in place in order to adjust and address our tax system. And that commission itself couldn't come up with recommendations, right? It's at a standstill. We still don't have them. They were supposed to come last fall, right? Like they said this fall, but now they still haven't met. And I don't know what's going, like, again, it is so confusing. It is another, for me, a bureaucratic process. I do think that if the right people are appointed, it could be really, really powerful. And it does provide an opportunity.
I would encourage folks who are interested in this to do that Google search, because I just looked at it and I don't want to get myself in trouble naming names here, but it is an interesting cast there of folks that make up that commission that you may be able to draw some conclusions from when you visit that. Yeah, if you just Google DC tax revision commission, you'll get an understanding of that. Let's make sure, let me just say, folks, you are tuned into Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. My name is Daniel Del Piélago. I am joined by Nadia Salazar. She is a senior campaigns manager with the D.C. Fiscal Policy Institute, and we're talking with her about her work with Just Recovery D.C., who's doing a lot of work around a more equitable tax system, making sure that those who can, who have both the social and financial capital, pay their fair share to make sure that all district residents, to borrow from the mayor, have a fair shot. Because as it is, not everybody has a fair shot nowadays here in the district, given the current financial situation and what's to come. If folks do want to connect with you, and we'll repeat this as we wrap up, but how are ways that folks can connect? I mentioned the website. I don't know if there's any meetings, any contact information. Let's make sure to share that now with folks.
Yeah, please reach out to me via email. That is the best way. You can also reach out to us through the website. There are ways to contact us via social media. So Twitter X, Facebook, Instagram. But my personal contact is nsalazar@dcfpi.org. So you're welcome to reach out to me if you're interested in participating, being part of the Just Recovery Coalition. If you want to join, as I said, we are doing a reorientation. So this is the perfect moment to join, to be able to bring your ideas, your energy. As Daniel was mentioning earlier, this is for a just DC, right? Like, tax justice is racial justice. And we want to invite as many people as possible to this fight because it will be ongoing. It's not going to end this cycle, it won't end next cycle. It's going to be an uphill battle, and we need as many people as possible.
That's right. And let's invite folks, if anybody has any questions, any comments, around this work, which, As I become more involved in the budget, you start to see all of the pieces that are necessary to make a fair, moral budget work. And the tax system is certainly a big, big part of that. So if anybody has any questions, any comments, please feel free to give us a call, 202-588-0893. Once again, that's 202-588-0893. To join the conversation. I'm sure Nadia will be glad to take a couple questions and have some discussion on the topic here at hand. Nadia, as we move on, though, unfortunately, sometimes these conversations do seem real depressing, right? Like, it's like, oh, Jesus, look at what we're all faced with. But I wonder if you could share some bright spots of, what can we build on, some of the victories, even if it is just like, we got more people involved. Like I said, like myself, not to count this as a victory, but like making people able to see the importance of this piece of racial justice, of equity. Talk to us about some of the highlights and some of the things that we can build on.
Yeah. I mean, just from this this cycle, I think one of the biggest wins, and yeah, not, I think everything seems really opaque and sad and kind of grim, but I want to remind folks that this taxing on property would not have happened had it not been for the organizing work that's happening on the ground, had it not been for the countless council visits and meetings that had to happen, and for the work that some of the council folks did. And so that in itself is a win. There was absolutely no talk of a progressive tax, right? That's a big win. So I want to invite you to join us so that we can get those small wins that do mean something, right? Because we can build on that now. We were able to say, well, now you can just lower the threshold. We're already there. Lower the threshold. We can actually make more money and cover some of these resources.
Awesome. And I believe we have a caller. Caller, we'll bring you on the air. If you could introduce yourself, give us your name and your question or comment.
Yes, my name is Robert Andrew Moses. I'm from Fort Washington, Maryland. And I just want to commend you on taking up issues that the working class needs people to advocate for them and need representatives in government that represent the interests of the working class. And, you know, this tax thing is critical. We need to be taxing the wealthy and looking out for the poor and downtrodden. And I commend you for your efforts in that area. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moses. We really do appreciate your listenership. We appreciate your call and the support. Thank you so much. Once again, if anybody else wants to join the conversation, feel free to give us a call. 202-588-0893 is the number. What can folks expect to see, you know, almost kind of mechanically, right? Like, do you all have a plan on having ongoing meetings?
Yes.
Any sort of events that folks can fold into? Talk to us about that.
Yeah, our actual reorientation, where we'll be kind of doing a lot of the strategizing for this year, is going to be happening on the 28th of this month. So folks are welcome to reach out to me and find ways to be able to participate in that. But I also wanted to circle back a little bit on giving a little bit of hope to this really tough conversation, right? I think outside of the narrative that was, outside of the work that was done to push the narrative in the right direction from what we initially had, I want to remind people too that in moments of urgency is when people act, right? Urgency pushes people into action. And I don't think we should need an emergency for folks to be able to come out and to act, right? But I do think that the response was clear, right? The initial budget did not include the earned income tax credit, and educators, parents, students, families came out and took over the Wilson building. And every council member that I spoke to was fighting, advocating, and working to make sure that EITC was something that was protected, right? So from moments of urgency, we have incredible organizing that leads into wins that might not seem big, but that are really meaningful that we can build on.
That's right. These incremental victories are so necessary to build upon. And as you said, you know, it can be overwhelming, but the realization that people are organizing, people are laying the groundwork to grow this work and strengthen this work is really important. And I also want to backtrack a little bit on something I had mentioned I wanted to put a pin in, but I think it's very, and this is just kind of cautionary, because I'm seeing this in the housing space, how the other side, for lack of a better term, those mm-hmm. folks that are making money, the big landlords, the big developers, are organizing. They're, you can make a strong argument yeah. that they're already well-organized and well-resourced, yeah. are really looking to break down some of the gains that we've made. Right, we're seeing it around the eviction process. Essentially, we're looking at an industry that wants to make it easier, for lack of a better way of saying it, to evict people, to relax some of those protections that have protected these district renters in the past. And so that's just in the housing space. But in general, you know, you had mentioned that a little bit. I wonder if you could talk a little bit more, because I think that's important to underscore that. You know, we're organizing and we're doing that, but the other side is yes. certainly doing that work.
Absolutely. The other side is doing the same. And I think one of the things you mentioned is it's well-resourced.
Yes.
You know, they have a lot of wealth to protect. They have a lot of things to protect. You know, they're pushing really strong on this tax flight narrative of, like, if you tax high-income people or people who have homes that are priced at a really high, whatever, that are really expensive, they'll leave. They'll leave DC, and that's not realistic. That's not the case. Folks are not going to leave DC. The district not only has many significant, like, it has its meaning for culture, and it's also proximity to power for these people, right? With the Capitol being there, with all the things happening there. So these folks are not leaving. This, like, tax flight narrative that they're going to really lean on is something we're going to have to fight back. And they're connected, right? They're watching who is talking to who. They're having their meetings. They're doing the same strategic planning that we're doing. They're making sure they're connecting with the right people. They're seeking out opportunities. They know election cycles happen, and they're not, you know, tied at the hands like some of us who do some nonprofit work, right? They are aware of the power that they possess, and they're aware of the resources that they have. So they are very... they're well organized. Wealth in DC has been protected because they've been organized, right? So it is kind of our moment, and it's our opportunity to step in and be able to push back on some of that that's been happening for a long time. That's definitely ramping up on their end as well.
That's right. Yeah. And we just saw it with the sports, you know, whatever you want to call it, down in Chinatown, right? Where billionaires are saying, you know, we're gonna leave because, you know, we're not making enough, or, you know, it's just such a failed narrative. Mm-hmm. and that we need to see through and make sure that, as you mentioned, that we're pushing back against and really using it in our organizing. I do want to once again plug your website. It's just recovery DC .org. And on it, you have several resources that I think are important to talk a little bit about. Can you just share a little bit about the resources and just how folks can get a little more familiar with the discussions we're having? It can be quite a bit, you know, but talk to us a little bit about the resources you all have available.
Yeah, I think some of the most important things that we have are the papers that were written by some of our policy analysts. With the analyses and the data that it includes, right? We have two important papers that I always direct people to, which is Wealth Inequality and Inequality Hurts the Economy. Those two resources are going to give you a good grounding on how tax justice and racial justice are connected and intersect. And so I really encourage you all to look at that. I also... really encourage you all to watch the video. We do have the video on the tax equity win, just so that it can give you a little bit of that excitement of some of the things that we have won in the past. But I think all of the papers that we have there are really important. We also have spaces for you to take action. So you're able to sign a petition and also join the campaign there. So you're able to subscribe directly there. That's another of the resources to get directly connected to us. But I do encourage all your listeners to read through, take their time, gather questions, reach out to us if you have any questions, because I do think it's important to start this conversation. A really big tool that the opposition uses is the fact that this work is really tough to get people excited behind, right? Like, it's really tough to get people excited around tax justice.
Yeah.
But they also rely on the fact that it is incredibly complicated because they have made it that way, right? They have made a process and a structure that is complicated for our communities to access, to be a part of, and to even know that it's happening. And so lean into it. It is uncomfortable. It makes no sense at the beginning because it's a structure that is drafted differently, right? Like, it's like going to Maryland and going to see how their laws are made. They work on like 4-month cycles. It's very, right? So everything has its weird structure, and this is one of those things. So I really encourage folks to lean into it. We're really wanting to do a lot more popular education this year coming as well, so that folks feel like they have more access to the information, the data, and the resources to be able to advocate for themselves and their communities.
Yeah, no, and I think that's really important, because even if we aren't doing direct tax equity, tax justice work, you know, the parlance comes up in our general advocacy work around, you know, the resources that are needed in this city, you know, revenue raisers, EITC, you know, all of these earned income tax credit, all of these things are you know, information that can be found there and that we should be familiar with, because they are important in our big picture advocacy, you know, trying to make this a better city for all folks here in the District of Columbia. As we begin to wrap up, Nadia, if you would once again please share, you know, how folks can be in contact. I don't know if there's any sort of specific meeting that's coming up. If you want to plug anything, you know, please feel free to do so. But how can folks get involved?
So one of the things that we do have coming up is that, like I said, our reorientation on the 28th, where we're going to be doing a lot of our strategic planning. So that's the best way to participate, to be able to be part of the planning for the next year. But in order to be part of that space, you have to be a member, and to join, please reach out to me. My email is nsalazar@dcfpi.org. Please reach out to me so that I can connect you and plug you into our work. Because we're in this process of kind of re-energizing, reorienting, we don't have events happening in the next 2 weeks, but that would be the biggest thing that we have coming up.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I don't know if you're allowed to, or if it makes sense, but just to give folks a sense of the breadth of who's a part of Just Recovery, could you talk a little bit about who's on the
Of course. I love to talk about our partners, and especially the people that carry some of this work. We have 53 organizations, so it would be impossible to mention some of the folks that work really closely with us this year. Obviously, DC Fiscal Policy Institute, we're the anchor. We do a lot of the coordinating. DC Action, DC Statehood Green Party, Fair Budget Coalition, Greater Washington, Jews United for Justice, Faces in Action, ATU Local 689, and Legal Aid for DC are some of the kind of the folks in the core that participated and carried a lot of this work.
Wonderful. And as I mentioned, as we wrap up, you know, what message do you have for folks, you know, who are feeling it and want to get involved? And just in general, you know, what's the message that we really need to get out there for folks as we begin? And once again, not that this work is it is directly tied to the budget, and it is constant work, as you had mentioned, but it is also an effort to organize with folks and you know, identify, develop leaders. What message do you have for folks as we re-engage in this work?
I think the biggest resounding message is that tax justice is racial justice. I think we don't connect the two, because it doesn't necessarily feel like they are connected, but they are, right? There is this historic ongoing structure that blocks certain people, that gives certain people privilege, and a part of that is our tax system. And I want to invite everyone to be part of that, in order to be able to dismantle that system, in order to be able to fight back, in order to be able to advocate, in order to be able to change things. You need to be part of it. You need to know what's happening to begin with, and really understand it through and through. And while it's difficult and while it's complicated because they've made it that way, it is absolutely worth it, because a lot of our a lot of the equity, and specifically economic equity, is going to lie on tax justice for our district residents, our communities in D.C. So I encourage all of you to join the fight, to get informed, to read, to learn, to reach out, to listen to things that have to do with D.C. tax policy and D.C. tax, D.C. taxing. So, learn and join.
That's right. And I was remiss. I should have asked this at the beginning of the show, but tell us a little bit about D.C. Fiscal Policy Institute for those one or two folks who may not know about this great organization.
You're totally fine. DC Fiscal Policy Institute, we've been around for over 20 years. We do a lot of data and analysis on tax and on taxes and the budget in DC, including programs and all of the things that come with it. So we have many, many areas of work. I can't even name all the areas of work that we do because we've done research on almost everything, education, labor, you name it. But our mission is mostly to essentially shape a racially just tax budget and policy decisions that center Black and Brown people in DC. So we got the data, we got the information, and we're also internally working to be able to bring some of this incredibly important analysis to life and to become campaigns and to grow them and to take them to the lengths that they need to.
Awesome. And I know you guys have a great newsletter that I certainly am subscribed to, and you can get a lot of good information around what's happening in the city as it relates to finances and the work that we've been talking about in general. So Nadia, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. As I mentioned, I think it's so important that we get a really big picture on all the fronts that we have to be active on. I think it can be overwhelming, but we also realize that there are people, you know, fighting on these fronts, and there are ways to get involved if that's what moves you, if that's what's calling you to get involved with. So once again, if you are interested, please make sure to reach out to Just Recovery DC, check out the work that they're doing, and get involved, because we certainly do need it. So thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Daniel. I really enjoyed my time here. I really hope folks are excited and energized to talk about taxes.
Yes, that's right. That's right. No, and as one of our colleagues always says, it may not be sexy, but you know, we need to get there. Because it certainly is critical. So thank you so much. All righty, folks, you have been tuned into Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. As always, we want to thank you for your listenership, for your support. It is really, really important for us to have this platform to bring on folks like Nadia to highlight some of the critical issues that we are experiencing in the district, and then most importantly, for ways to get connected in the fight back. So we really are humbled by your support and by your listenership. Big shout out to the caller who appreciated the conversation we were having this afternoon. We really do appreciate that energy, and that's what we hope to provide to you know, the listeners of Taking Action, but more largely the listeners of WPFW, you know, with this information and access and being a bridge to connect folks to some of the good work that's happening for the good fight, as it were, here in the District of Columbia. So with that, we will leave you. We will see you next Tuesday here on Taking Action. If anybody has any questions and needs to reach out to us regarding this topic that we just talked about or any other topic we've talked about, please feel free to give me a call at 202-731-8634, or you can always email me at daniel@empowerdc.org. Thanks so much, everyone. We will catch you next Tuesday. Peace for now. Stay tuned for COVID, Race, and Democracy. But before that, you've got the news coming right up. Peace, everyone. We'll catch you next Tuesday.
WPFW is looking for volunteers to answer phones and enter donor information during our summer membership drive beginning August 11th through August 24th. Phone volunteering is a fun way of meeting new people and possibly your favorite programmers while also supporting the station. Need community service hours? Phone volunteering is the perfect solution. Contact us at volunteers@wpfw.org or leave a voice message at 202-588-0999, extension 1008. That's volunteers@wpfw.org or 202-588-0999, extension 1008. For additional information, WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. Vice President Kamala Harris has made her pick for running mate in this presidential election, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. Walz is a former social studies teacher and football coach turned Democratic politician whose agenda includes protections for abortion rights and generous aid to families. In a tweet, Harris said of Walz, and I quote, "As a governor, a coach, a teacher, and a veteran, he's delivered for working families like his," end quote. She added, "It's great to have him on the team." In like manner, Walz tweeted that it is, quote, "the honor of a lifetime to be Harris's vice presidential pick." It's been noted that by choosing a Midwestern governor as her running mate, Kamala Harris is looking to secure her campaign standing across the upper Midwest, which is a critical region in presidential politics that often serves as a buffer for Democrats seeking the White House. Vice President Harris, along with her husband, Second Gentleman Doug Emhoff, and Governor Tim Walz, are set to appear together this evening at a rally in Philadelphia. This summer has not only brought extreme heat, but also an increase in COVID-19 cases. According to data from the CDC, nearly 40 states are reporting high COVID activity levels, and emergency room visits are at their highest for the virus since February. The newest variant, KP311, which is in the flirt variant family, now accounts for more than 1 in 4 cases in the United States as of this past Saturday, August 3rd. Dr. Celine Gounder said it is to be expected that every few months, maybe twice a year or so, we see a big wave of COVID across the country. She explained some factors behind the summer surge, saying in part, and I quote, "One, the virus continues to evolve to stay ahead of our immune systems. 2, your immunity to infection only lasts about 3 months," end quote. She added that another reason for COVID's increase this summer is people traveling and spending more time indoors and not masking as much. She also said if you're sick, you should be staying away from others for at least 24 hours, at least until fever resolves without the help of a medication like Tylenol and your symptoms are improving. Then she said you should, as much as possible, take additional measures for at least 5 more days, which is when you're most infectious and most likely to transmit to other people. To your local news, New York and the tri-state area as a whole is under a flood watch this afternoon. As a result of an expected cold front, rainfall rates could reach or exceed 2 inches or more per hour in local areas, with 2 to 4 inches of total rainfall possible by tonight. Prior to that, pockets of heavy rain are expected to develop this afternoon and become more widespread during the evening commute. The threat of heavy downpours will continue through the evening and decrease overnight. In addition to the flood threat, severe storms may come as well, with the biggest threat being winds that could snap tree limbs and cause power outages. Isolated hail is also possible. Areas west of New York City are at the greatest risk for severe storms this afternoon and evening. In the D.C. area, the district is celebrating National Night Out, or NNO, which is an annual event that takes place countrywide on the first Tuesday in August. Today, D.C.'s police department will join city residents, government officials, and other community members to celebrate America's night out against crime, with cookouts, block parties, and games. National Night Out is designed to accomplish several goals, such as heighten crime and drug prevention awareness, generate support for and participation in local anti-crime programs, strengthen relationships between police and the community, and send a message to criminals letting them know that neighborhoods are organized and fighting back. National Night Out events are being held in each of D.C.'s 8 wards, but the main event is happening at Sycamore and Oak, 1110 Oak Drive Southeast, from 4 to 8 p.m. today. In today's weather, it's currently about 89 degrees in New York and 93 degrees in D.C.